When you're lost in the darkness, look for The Pod. Specifically, the Prestige TV podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network, where we're breaking down every new episode of HBO's The Last of Us. On Sunday nights, grab your battery and join Van Lathan and Charles Holmes for an instant reaction to the latest episode.
Then head back to the QZ on Tuesdays for a deep dive with Joanna Robinson and Mallory Rubin. From character arcs to video game adaptation choices, story themes to needle drops, we'll parse every inch of this cordyceps-coded universe. Watch out for mouth tendrils and follow along on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
I need sports staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRigger.com, and joining me in the studio, deeply upset by the Sub-Zero erasure on last night's The Last of Us, it's Andy Greenwald!
Can you feel the energy? We're back.
Oh, God. I'm free. Burbank, I salute you. I don't ever want to visit you again after 9 days of ISO, and now I'm back. I'm out. I'm eating small plates. People are explaining menus to me like I've never been to a restaurant before. I love it.
The only thing better...
And it's great to see you. It's great to see Kaya. I mean,
Chris, you were in a little bit of viral jail for a minute. Not that the podcast audience would
know. I was just being
know.
Responsible, man. I was just trying to keep my fellow Californian safe.
Now, while you
beating
were...
my wife, who was like, get the fuck out of this house.
I was going to say, no one else minded at all. What was the vibe at the hotel? Like, did they know they had a quote unquote special guest?
Like, no, like special because they're like, we're huge fans of Philly Special.
No. More like, who is, you know, Count Podula who lives up there?
Oh, patient only... number 323 who never seems to leave his room.
But is talking at high volume constantly.
Yeah,
about...
I know. I would say that by the end, we were all friends. Let's just put it that way.
Who's we?
Me and like the whole staff, everybody, all the various delivery drivers for ramen spots around Burbank. It was great.
Did the cleaning staff come up to you with tears in their eyes being like, sir, we've never seen a podcaster like this.
Andy, it's great to see you. You seem a little bit... I know that with this weather kind of gets you down. And so I'm glad. I think it's good for you to be here with me and Kaya today. Just looking me straight in the eye.
It is. I'm taking off my glasses, hitting the mic. I don't even know what to do with my body.
How have you been?
I'm good. I'm feeling, Chris, really bullish about the state of podcasting. Not just because you're back, but because here we are at Spotify HQ. And I got to say, it's a fresh pot of coffee bubbling.
Yeah.
They've replenished the snacks. It's not just granola bars anymore. There's jalapeno chips.
Uh-huh. Because that's what you want at 10 a.m.
I just feel like this is a bold bet on the future of audio.
Yeah.
And I'm here for
and
it.
We're the faces of it.
We are the faces of audio. People have been telling us that for years. Yeah, I'm not normally a second coffee at 10 a.m. guy, but you know, something about the energy you bring once you are super immune that is really something.
Well, I was worried about you.
Yeah.
Because not only do you have really like a poor reactions to stormy weather, which
terrible.
We've been having out here in Los Angeles. But I know that you had a lot emotionally invested in the second weekend box office of Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania.
Oh, my God.
And since it is now on record as the worst performing second weekend of a Marvel film, yeah. I was worried that you wouldn't maybe not even show up today.
I was out on Front Street. I was like, if there's one film...
Were you dressed as
power.
Ant-Man, as Scott Lang, outside of Ant-Man?
Weirdly, I was dressed as the Wasp. And everyone was like, are you in this movie? And I was like, sir?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. people may have raised their eyebrows at us just, you know, going out to the woodshed on this movie last week. They were like, look at box office don't lie, they said to us.
Yeah.
And I said, maybe it does. Maybe it does, because a lot of the staying power of these popular movies, word of mouth. People telling their friends, people saying, I got to go again to find out which Kang is which.
Right.
And it turns out maybe they don't care.
Okay, so there's, let me throw a counter
in. The only one they care about is Kokang Bear. can I try that?
Today we're doing Last of Us, we're doing Party Down's Return, and we're doing Kunk on Earth, a Netflix show that we both really enjoy. But let's talk about this Ant-Man thing for a second. Could you make the argument that there is now a learned behavior of just being like, I'll just wait for it to come out on Disney Plus. It's too expensive to get a babysitter or to do whatever. I mean, hypothetically, like you would bring a child.
You bring your babies to Quantumania.
I bring all of my babies.
Nothing delights an infant like Corey Stahl's performance as MODOK.
But okay, so there's that. There's the idea that you could just be like, in 3 months, this will be on Disney Plus and I'll knock it out then. Or what you're saying, which is this sort of really tepid word of mouth coming out of the movie, that it has completely killed the almost instant rewatch that I think powers movies to the billion-dollar mark. Now, it's hard for me to imagine someone being like, let me go see Venom again, you know? But I guess there are people out there who do that.
They're called Hardy Boys.
But Avengers, for instance, like the Infinity War and Endgame saga, like, I feel like people went and saw that 2-3 times in the theater.
I think there's two things. I think it would be flattering to us and our profound aesthetic opinions that people saw this movie in the opening weekend and went to tell their friends. They didn't really consider the CGI imagination. The frame isn't filled out with deep thought.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. I do think that what's communicated by this movie in the trailers and in the word of mouth and in the coverage is that this is a plank in the Phase 5 strategy. And I really think that people are mezzo-mezzo on the Phase 5 strategy. I think that when you build a shared cinematic universe based on the idea that everything is connected and you have to see everything, it works, A, when the stories are good and people are into the story, but B, when it's more tightly curated.
Mm-hmm.
There is this feeling, right? Where I imagine that we are not the only people who, quote-unquote, didn't finish Moon Knight. You know what I mean? Like, not to paint with too broad a brush. And they might be like, I don't know what to do with this. I like it when Michael Peña was in it.
I'm waiting for Disney Plus, actually.
You're waiting for them to do for Moon Knight what they did for Andor, which is run it on
ABC.
True TV or ABC once. Yeah. It's interesting. I wonder, getting a little sweaty, maybe.
Maybe.
At Feige HQ.
So, like, what's next is...
It's Guardians, and it's going to
Guardians.
Crush. It's going to do so well.
Guardians is going to probably like swing the other way.
Yeah.
But I think that there will be some... Is James Gunn leaving Marvel like the biggest like misstep that Feige's ever made in 31 movies? Is letting this guy out of the building instead of being like, what do you want to do next? The entire toy chest belongs to you.
Also, I think that there are people who are like playing 4D chess who are like, Chris's move is that he's zagging to DC, and they see that. But I don't think that's the case.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Look, I'm taking meetings. You know what I mean?
You're open?
I love to go to lunch. Like take me out. Let me know what's Shazam about, you know?
Do you want to hear the story?
Yeah.
You could see the first Shazam.
Why couldn't I see the second one?
You could, but I'm saying if you want to know what it's about.
Oh.
You could spend some time.
No, I
now.
Mean, what's Shazam about, like, politically? You know, like, what's it about, like, what's the ideology behind the
anti-vax,
Shazam?
Apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
No, my thing is, what I've been reading the tea leaves and just podcasting with you for years, I can tell that what you are most hyped / befuddled by is Secret Invasion. I just think that you're lame.
Because it looks so good, but I don't understand the Kree and the Skrulls at all.
Right.
Like, I think I have a better grasp on the time variance.
Right.
Than I do about, like, I can just pull my face off and I'm a different person constantly. Yeah, no, I hate that.
You could talk 5 minutes about the Donbass right now and its importance to Putin's larger there is no Ukraine strategy. But when you get into the weeds in the Kree-Skrull War, I mean...
Putin has just been potting, like, all weekend. Have you been looking at the news?
Potting?
He's just like, and another thing. And another thing. Coming back.
Yeah.
I have another bit to do on NATO here.
Is he bullish on audio strategy?
Dude. Did you see Zelensky was like, I think Putin's going to be killed by his own inner circle?
No. I did. Which podcast have you been listening to these guys on? Wow. You had a lot of...
That's on East Coast Bias. You should check it out.
I really wish there was a podcast where you just sort of talked about what you did in between podcasts in Burbank. like the media that you dug into.
I wish I could say that I just, and anybody who follows me on Letterboxd knows this, I wish I could say that I had like an incredibly enriching COVID where I just watched incredible Criterion films and logged them, but I didn't. I watched Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives because I didn't really feel like being on my laptop all day. Yeah. So I watched the TV in the hotel.
Right.
But the internet connection of the television, so like I couldn't sign into Netflix or sign into anything.
Right.
So I just was like kind of watching regular cable, and the guide function on the TV was broken.
Oh boy.
So it was only ever like at 10 a.m. when I checked in or something like that.
Yeah.
It stayed that way. So every time I wanted to see what was on, I had to go through the entire, I just flipped channels 53 times.
Would you like to revise your take about how TV was better when we could just flip channels? Did this force
you
to
I'll just watch Shark Tank for 2 hours and that's just fine, you know?
I want to help you out with something, give you a gift. No one had a productive COVID watching. Like during COVID, when I had it, I rewatched Parks and Recreation, which was fantastic. I believe I watched the pilot of Bad Sisters. I have no memory of it and feel that my mezzo-mezzo response is not
possibly
legitimate.
Informed by it, yeah.
And then I also read like two Rachel Cusk novels and a book by a Japanese writer about a world with no language.
That's so much better than what I did.
But I don't remember the books.
Like I would read 4 pages of a Len Deighton spy novel and fall asleep.
I may have fallen asleep too. I don't know.
Can I just mention one other news story before we get into The Last of Us?
I hope you're going to mention the big news story.
That the night manager is coming back?
More nights, more management.
This is a... They did the book.
Yeah.
And it's pretty odd. I mean, like, I salute them.
Yeah.
I like Tom Hiddleston. I love the night manager. It'd be cool if Olivia Colman comes back. I have a hard time believing she will.
DeBecky, too. She was great in that.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was very much tied to the novel.
Right.
One of which John le Carré wrote. And now they're just like, I guess... So one idea I had for them, since I heard it's going to be set in Europe and South America, is there some other le Carré bits out there that you could pull from? Get a little Tailor of Panama going.
First of all, I love that book. And underrated movie. Are you suggesting a le Carré CU?
LCCU? Yeah, but that's what they're doing. But they've like, his sons, I think, are like managing the sort of film properties.
But are you pitching a Castle Rock of le Carré? Remember that Castle Rock show where it was all Stephen King?
I wonder whether or not we've kind of hit like a little bit of a maximum CU. You know,
of just CUs in general.
Yeah. And just maybe just make really nicely done one-offs.
I think that's for the best.
I think that you could build something larger around Smiley and Carla and have offshoots of that. But there's only one le Carré and there's only one, you know, I mean, in some ways, there's really only one adaptation of le Carré, which is essentially a page for page adaptation of Tinker Tailor on the BBC.
Yep.
With Alec Guinness. So much so that le Carré was like, George Smiley no longer belongs to me. He belongs to Alec Guinness. But I do think that there's opportunities there. And obviously, I would watch every single second of it. But I thought this was interesting because it's one of the first moments that I can remember someone taking such beloved pre-existing story material and just saying like, okay, in recent memory, because so much of it is like based on like, okay, we have to stick to the text because the fans are such fans of the text.
I think the comparable one would be what AMC is also trying to do with Anne Rice in the Anne Rice universe.
But doesn't she have like, aren't they adapting that off of the books themselves? I just don't, there's not a night manager too.
Right. Okay. I mean. In terms of the expansion, I think and I agree, and I think it's interesting and it's project dependent and writers and who knows.
Yeah. Same guy who did Night Manager is doing
it. It's likely not going to be bad, and it might be interesting, and it'd be also interesting to see what it, you know, for the very Catholic le Carré fans, like, what it means to be venturing off book.
Yeah, yeah.
I do wonder, broadly, and it's something we can revisit and look at, like, Hollywood's obsession with IP and established properties and authors is well-founded and well-trod terrain, even for us, but is it diminishing returns? Like, there's safety in a... I don't want to say struggling, but certainly not as seaworthy an enterprise as like Apple or Netflix, streamer like AMC being like, Anne Rice and le Carré, we're all in on these authors and their catalogs because we know they have some ardent fans who will check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what Paramount's does with Star Trek on, you know, like there's always going to be people to watch Star Trek, but how high is the roof on these things?
Yeah.
I don't know. maybe this is a side note, a side way of me saying that I checked out Picard season 3. I like to surprise you on Mike.
Is this what the news was?
No, the news is, I don't know if you've heard, but there's an HBO show called Succession.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about this.
I did just want to, I like it when you have Letterboxd. I sometimes just come in studio and tell you that I've watched something.
Okay.
I've got very little more to say, but.
Wait, of Star Trek Picard?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've not seen a single moment of Star Trek Picard.
I mean, look, I'm a big Gates McFadden guy from way back, from her debut on screen in Muppets Take Manhattan as Dabney Coleman's secretary. But, and I like seeing Beverly Crusher back on screen and all the gang.
Yeah.
But it's pretty wild to see these very, very old people, like, shooting plasma cannons and trying to make, like, contemporary shows, but moving very delicately while they do it. It's sweet. It's nice that they all got to hang out.
And this is the final season, right?
I mean, I just think... Look, I watch White House briefings. No one's going to ever say anything's the final season. But I'm just saying Jean-Luc sits a lot more than he used to.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
What was your take, I guess, what's your take?
Yeah.
Succession, is it the right time to end it?
Okay, so Jesse Armstrong, we can call him Jesse, old friend. We talked to him.
Two-time watch guest?
Didn't he come all three seasons? I think we've had him three times. I think so.
But maybe not, because maybe we missed the COVID year or
something. Maybe one time I just talked to him.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that was probably it.
The Andy Greenwald show.
Yeah, it's a podcast. But I was shocked. I assume we were number two on the list. I assume he turned to his press team and was like, I got to get the word out.
Get Becky Mead on the phone.
He's like, they're like, sir, you have two options to deliver this news. The New Yorker magazine or these two guys on the internet.
Yeah.
And he went to the New Yorker to announce that the Wrapped and soon to debut season 4 of Succession is going to be the final season.
Did you have a feeling?
Yeah, I mean, they were really, really, really out front with being like, we're not going to be doing this forever. They were never coy about that.
Yeah, Brian Cox the most of any.
In retrospect, the fact that it was being aggregated again last week, that Brian Cox was like, fuck Jeremy Strong, he's an annoying prat.
Well, so Jeremy Strong did the GQ story and he did... like this whole video of like my, so they're supposed to do these videos where they're like my 10 essential items and Jeremy Strong had like 36 of them. But when he was talking about all the little accoutrement that he brought that was like relevant to Kendall.
Right.
The entire video he's referring to Kendall in the past tense. He's just like Kendall was. Like,
and I was tea like, leaf oh. people
so,
on that?
So like yeah. if it was, I just have a hard time. I really do wonder whether or not it's like we could do the show with or without Kendall. Let's just do it with Kendall and end it.
I don't know. I mean, I think, first of all, I think I'm impressed. I mean, I think that Jesse Armstrong is, we say it every year when the show comes back, I think he is a TV writer on a level that few people have ever been. I think his stewardship of the show has been absolutely incredible. The vibes, even, like, from the majority of the cast, the writers he works with, it seems like he's a good manager and runs a good ship. And, look, it's very, very tempting to continue to chase success and stability. You know, I think best-case scenario, you could point to the Breaking Bad people and Vince Gilligan, who have kept a good thing going for over a decade, without necessarily diminishing returns, and are pretty upfront. They're like, we love our crew, we love doing this, why would we stop? And then we get to the Popcorners ads and you begin to wonder maybe they should stop. Not that Vince Gilligan had anything to do with that. I think Jesse Armstrong comes from a very different tradition of British TV where you do 2 6-episode seasons and then become legends.
And then take 5 years off and come back and do a Christmas special. I mean, that is maybe one... That was sort of like, in my mind, I was like, it would be kind of amazing if they just never broke the band up but stopped touring, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, there is a like Luther has never been canceled. He just makes Luthers every so often, right? I think that's very possible. But I think about what this does. First of all, it's a huge blow to the podcast industry. We love covering the show.
Seriously.
We love the show. But think about what this does for this season and also for what it must have done in the writer's room when, as he said in the New Yorker piece, you know, we weren't entirely sure, but we were playing everything out to the extent that we felt we understood it and what was right for the characters and right for the story. And that was it. And that gives me an enormous jolt of confidence about this season. I think amidst all of the raves for season 3, there was a little bit of how many different ways are there to break up the band and get it back together.
Yeah.
There would be diminishing returns. And as we said last year and every year, there's a version of the show where it runs for 10 years and it's just good times.
It's Veep.
It's just jokes,
yeah.
You know, but I think that what
and there's a Veep inside of Succession
for sure. But what makes it,
and I don't mean that as a diss of Veep. I wish Veep was still on. You know what I mean?
I think Succession, you can make the case it's the best comedy on television. But what makes it exemplary is the fact that it has this deep, deep emotional pathos as well. A lot of it derived from Jeremy Strong's performance and the Kendall character. And I think no one is going to read this room better than the creator of the show. So, and I also think it's kudos to our recent in-studio guest, Casey Bloys, that I do think he and HBO historically have run things this way.
Yeah.
You're done? Okay, you're done. All right.
Yeah.
It was up to us to have prepared for this day, you know, and have other things in the pipeline. Do I think he might revisit some of these characters or this tone or this world in the future? I would not be surprised. But I think
But it's interesting. I don't really think of... I mean, there are a few people who have come out of the Succession creative umbrella. Mark Mylod obviously directed The Menu. He's the director of a lot of the episodes, the best episodes of Succession. Several writers have gone on to do great stuff. Court Jefferson was working on Succession. Like, there's a bunch of people Lucy Preble. But I don't know if there is a Peter Gould on the show that would be like, hey, I'm going to take the reins and start the Saul of this. I'm going to take Cousin Greg and Tom, and like, I have the aesthetic so down that we're going to go do this.
I think what's kind
of
interesting...
And would you want to see Greg and Tom running in B&B in Vermont or something like that?
Yes. Sorry, you just called me totally flat-footed. Yes, yes, I would. And all listeners of this podcast would as well. I think what would be interesting to me, and this is not something that Jesse needs to answer for or even should be asked, although he will be over the next few months as the season unfurls, the kind of sideways earth that Succession is set on, where the Roys have their empire... There's more stories there to be told in this tone. You know, I would expect to see some scripted something on HBO that refers to the Roy family or Waystar Royko just abstractly before I saw Cousin Tom again. Cousin Greg again and Tom.
Okay.
Who knows? But that vision of that world, and as we discovered last season, industry may exist in the Succession universe.
That's true.
So there might be some opportunities there.
That's true.
I don't know. I just feel like...
Kendall out on the lash in London. Let's go.
At a time, I mean, we're going to talk about the Party Down reboot at a time, which is not comparable, but we are... The idea of something ending is kind of unique at this moment.
Yeah.
And I really respect
that. But I can't wait to see what Jesse does next. Like, it's truly exciting to think about, like, what his next project might be.
It just does... Doesn't it also just feel very not Hollywood? You know, I just feel like he's in London. He has a different life. He's had different lives already, right? With Peep Show and being a comedy writer and being a part of that world and then kind of crashing into Hollywood as a dramatic writer and winning Emmys. I mean, he's had different phases of his career. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of cool to think, well, okay, well, what's he going to do next? And he probably will do something quite different, which is thrilling. But it's a massive Jenga tile out of the tower that is contemporary TV.
Just as a bit of admin, I did an impromptu Prestige TV Hall of Fame episode with Sean and Bill about whose side are you on, the sixth episode of the first season.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll go back and rewatch much of this, the past seasons leading up to Succession? Is that like a habit for you? Because it's generally not, but with Succession, I was wondering whether or not you would go back and cherry pick.
I think last season I watched the season two finale before, which was a nice way to go. I might do the same thing. Succession is the rare show where just thinking about it, just you naming an episode makes me smile because you think about what pleasures await inside of it. So I would love to rewatch some of it.
I had forgotten that it goes, whose side are you on, Austerlitz, Prague? And just being like, we really had something there for a month.
Remember when the dude dives into the pool and breaks his face in Taos?
Yeah.
God, it's a good show.
That's a really good show.
I'm excited it's coming back.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Want to talk about Last of Us?
You want to do Last of Us first and then Party Down and Kunk? Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I think that I have the most to say about The Last of Us, to be honest.
Okay.
Okay, so sometimes I do a little bit of a plot recap. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a huge one here for this because it was such a contained and kind of easy to track episode. But it's essentially, when we pick up the action, which is essentially the last moments of last week's episode, which is Joel getting stabbed in the stomach with a baseball bat and needing medical attention.
Was he stabbed with a bat?
It was impaled with the end of a baseball bat, right?
Something sharp, though, I would imagine. I thought it was more of a knife.
I thought it was a broken off bat or something.
Oh, it was like a Roger Clemens thing.
I could be wrong. That's what I thought. I have to admit, I didn't Zapruder film it, but I thought somebody was you got hit with a bat.
He took a wound.
Took a stomach wound. Generally, when you get a stomach puncture like that, you're going to want to get some kind of professional medical attention.
That's been my experience.
Joel winds up having a 14-year-old. So he tells her to get back to Tommy, to leave him. And as Ellie is walking out the door to do so, she has a 50-minute flashback going back to her days in the Boston QZ. Now, Ellie has alluded to everybody that she's ever cared about has either died or disappeared or whatever. And she's obviously traumatized by the way that the pandemic or the zombie epidemic has shaped her perception of reality and stuff. And she has this memory of being in Fedra as a kid and kind of being on the wrong track. And there's allusions to a best friend of hers named Riley, who is no longer in Fedra, but she's given this choice by a kindly CO, essentially, to choose between...
Played by Terry Chen. Yeah. I really enjoyed his performance.
Yeah, and it's you can either be a shit shoveler in this world, or you can become a leader, and we think you have the potential to be a leader, but you have to stop fucking around. And just when Ellie seems to be kind of on the straight and narrow, Riley comes back, and she's like, come out with me, go out into the city, I want to show you something, and reveals that she has joined the Fireflies. And this is going to be one last great night for them to hang out. So they go to what I think is Copley Center Mall.
I thought that was Copley.
Yeah, I think in Boston.
You have memories of Copley?
Of course, man. Yeah, that was a great cut through. So when I used to live in Back Bay, but I needed to get up to Newberry or I needed to get up to Mass Ave or whatever, I would cut through Copley, especially when it was raining or cold, which it was 9 months ago.
Treat yourself to an Auntie Anne's, by the way, just to warm the belly.
There's a really awesome sequence in this episode where they go through the mall. They see all the old mall stores. And this is where we find out that Riley is essentially stationed and where they are hiding a bunch of some explosive devices used on Fedra. Riley's in the Fireflies. She tries to kind of coax Ellie into joining the Fireflies, but Ellie is I'm in Fedra, and I think that I'm going to make a go of this.
Do you think Joel is lying here during all this, being there's a time and a place for memories?
Go or stay, I don't care, I'm bleeding out.
Yeah. Okay, let's get on with it.
Yeah, it's can I just die alone? instead of you standing in the doorway having this reverie?
Just thinking?
Yeah. And we can get into a lot of the details of the mall stuff, but in the end...
we will.
After them sharing a lovely moment, tender moment of a kiss, a infected awakens, jumps them, bites both of them, and we are left with the two of them kind of embracing But we know that Ellie lives. I assume Riley dies. And this is kind of like what forms Ellie's worldview. Mm-hmm. And is like, never give up. You never know how much time you have. Mm-hmm. Got to live life to the fullest. And she comes back downstairs and just straight up just sews this dude up.
Which is weird because prior to that last moment, it seemed like her new motto for life was finish him.
So I wanted, let's start with moral combat
too. Well, hold on. A couple things. I did want to say, I mentioned Terry Chen, who I really liked in that role. Did you recognize him? This is a very Grantland-esque reference, but that's Ben Fong-Torres from Almost Famous.
Oh, the guy who played Ben Fong-Torres.
No, the actor who played Rolling Stone editor.
From Craig Mazin to get Ben Fong-Torres. Just
to play a Fedra commanding officer? Okay, fair, fair. Before we get into the mall stuff, which I'm excited to do, can I just also say, this episode was directed by Liza Johnson, who has a really strong episodic resume of directing TV. I thought this was a gorgeous episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was noteworthy.
It also looked different. Like, it had a little bit more handheld. It
Cassini,
was like a little
Soretta,
bit...
sorry if I mangled her name, was the DP. Mm. And the two of them, the colors, the light in this episode. Can you also tell I got a new TV? But man.
And glasses.
Because I did, and glasses. Did you know this season has been in color?
Yeah.
I had no
idea.
Did
you know that in... There's like a whole tracking shot in True Detective. They don't cut.
What? That's why I didn't like the show. I just thought it was gorgeous. And to your point, yes, different visually because it's a different time and evoking different. I just thought that was really impressive. I have a note. So this was, again, in my view, like a sign of the show's healthy moral compass, which I know is not where people want to begin when talking about a popular zombie show. But, you know, I feel like week to week or day to day in the room or even minute to minute, Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann and their team were faced with like, what are we going to focus on today? And I just feel like they kept choosing, to quote our favorite film Trainspotting, they kept choosing life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were like, let's fill out the story. Let's make this character more understandable. Let's show them happy. Let's show more colors in their particular rainbow. Again, my TV is great. Can see it all. Full spectrum. And what I do is I turn motion smoothing on.
Good for you.
I go around to people's houses and I'm like, no, no.
You really, it's you and Ryan Johnson are just on a head-on collision
on.
Course.
Yeah. Always. Smoother the better, baby. So I just thought that was the right choice to make.
Okay.
Did I find this episode as narratively compelling as the past few? No, but I thought it was tasteful and lovely. I have to start here with you. There's a bunch of media in this episode. And we're going to talk about this in the mall. Ellie has a Walkman. Upon which she, in which she listens to Pearl Jam and Aha.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to point, I just want to have a note, and if we get to talk to Craig or anyone, maybe we can bring it up to their face, that like, I know everyone has their particular moment when time stopped before the zombie apocalypse and or college.
Yeah.
But this show, the world ended in 2002, right? Not 1991.
03, right? The breakout's in 03, and then the show is set in 23.
Right, 2003.
Right, and she's born in Is she born in 2009?
I guess so, yeah.
So it's...
In Obama's America, except not.
Is that right? I'm trying to figure out the timeline.
She's 14?
In the show, yeah, right?
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you want to reference this to 2009 as we remember it?
Well, no.
my thing is, and this is not just me being like, she should have been listening to Turn on the Bright Lights in her Walkman. I was just like, I get it, and it's beautiful, and a lot of us of a certain age who make TV and watch TV have memories of certain types of cultural touchstones. But 2003 legit was just 4 years after the height of CD sales, where they were just printing plastic discs in the billions. And so to have a Walkman with a Pearl Jam tape and an Aha tape and Etta James tape feels a little cutesy-wootsy. You know what I mean?
So I've been trying to figure this out because...
If she had any tapes, it would be like me. She would have like the what was the guy from...
Like, wouldn't she just have Cracked Rearview Mirror or something?
Yes. Yes. Or she'd have like Bills, 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 Ka-Single.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Like, was Britney around?
Yeah, Britney was around, dude. Come on.
But she would have been...
I'm not saying because she's a teenage girl she would have that. I just mean, like, if they QZ'd Boston, Newbury Comics is safe.
Sure, but Newbury Comics didn't have cassettes.
Okay, but I was still rocking...
I'm reporting from the front. We did not. It was still South Park poops and CDs.
Dude, I still had only a cassette player in my Volkswagen Golf. So
I remember, I was
playing
cassettes. But didn't you have the cassette with the wire that came out of it that you could plug into your...
I don't like to brag on this podcast. But, and I said, here, Chris, hold this Discman steady. Yes, I did. I'm just trying to make a larger point that, like, it works, it's evocative, but similarly, when they go into the mall, Frozen in 2003, and it's the arcade that we went to
yeah.
in 1991, that was just a little, that was a little, I so bumped on
I,
that.
I bumped on I that. I don't want to get too bogged down in this.
I do.
But do you think it's weird
mm-hmm.
that Ellie understands concepts like anarchism,
mm-hmm.
terrorism,
yep.
and propaganda, but doesn't know what an escalator is?
It's a great question. It's
and
a great
even
question.
In her, and like, so I've made this sort of point a couple of times, and this is definitely not like a sticking point where it takes away from my enjoyment mm-hmm. of the show. Although my wife did snap at me when I was just like, she doesn't know what an escalator is. And she's just like, just watch. But
did she make you go back to Burbank? No, he's saying, not better yet.
I'm actually still living in Burbank. Yeah. I'm just allowed to work now.
I see.
No, I was watching and I was just like, she's never come across like the concept of an escalator in any of her pun books.
Right.
Like
right.
The concept of a moving staircase has never been broached.
Yeah, that's a very unfrozen caveman lawyer.
That's my thing.
Yeah, and my thing is, as someone who was going to arcades and attempting to play certain popular games during the era in which they were popular, I'm here to tell you that I never figured out how to do a fatality in that game.
Well, I did on Sega.
At home?
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, in the arcade, unless someone's older brother or cooler kid was like, up, down, left, right, rip his spine out, you're just fumbling, you're just hitting
buttons.
Well,
you can find that stuff in some video game magazines.
Okay, so you're saying that Riley, because either she lived there for months, practicing, alone.
For 3 weeks, yeah.
3 weeks is not enough time. Unless she went into Walden Books and found, like, a guide to Mortal
well,
Kombat
Well, I doubt that the Mortal Kombat guides were the things being looted at the point of the apocalypse.
Finally! Finally! What was the guy's name? Johnny? What was the guy, the one dude who didn't have a hat in Mortal Kombat? It was, like, Johnny something?
A hat.
Well, Raiden has a big hat.
Yeah, Sub-Zero has a hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're dodging my question.
Who was the guy who pulled people's hearts out?
All of them.
No, right. I thought it was only one guy.
Well, they all did.
I mean, Sub-Zero would freeze you and shatter you.
I think they all had multiple fatalities. But I didn't know because I didn't know how to do it.
Okay.
All right, look, we're getting bogged down here. It's a lovely and touching coming-of-age story that does have some... there were some bumps. There were some bumps for me, just in terms of, yeah, like, what level of familiarity does she have with the world? I mean, they're living in the city, but they don't go anywhere, but they have certain privileges and they have posters of things. There was just a lot of... It was a lot of data dump for us about
sure.
what that world was like.
Yeah. Do you think that it... I was sort of surprised that Ellie was, personality-wise, very much the same person in the QZ, in Fedra, all that.
Right.
I guess it's not that far, because obviously Marlene gets introduced as an idea in this,
yep.
this episode, so it's not that far away from when the actual show starts. But I was... And I guess probably, like, the thing that really makes her who she is whatever happened to her parents, right?
Well, it seems like she didn't... The takeaway from the conversation with Riley, and we should mention Storm Reid, who plays that part, and I'm sure we'll talk more about her in a minute, but is that what differentiates them, according to Riley, is that she had parents and lost them.
Yeah.
And that Ellie never knew her parents.
Okay.
So she is just sort of kind of surly...
Well, it just took
kid.
Me back to a time I remember, I think I was younger than the character in the show, but there was a time in my life where mm-hmm. I discovered the phrase, so what?
Oh.
And every time my parents would say anything,
yeah.
I would go, so?
Yeah.
So what?
That's cool.
And I didn't know really how rude that sounded because it just like, I saw it once on TV or like a kid in my class said it, but I was like, that's dope.
Did you think the studio audience would start clapping? Like that would be your sassy catchphrase?
But... I came to find out, both from my parents expressing it to me in the time, but also in retrospect, thinking back on my behavior, that was probably pretty fucking annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the zone that Ellie is in.
As a kid?
Yeah.
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 She's tough.
Yeah.
I also was curious, it did feel like a little bit of backfilling when the kindly CEO is just like, I see leadership in you.
Yeah. It's like really?
Where did you...
It's not exactly Joe Burrow sitting across from you.
That's what I'm saying. She's just like listlessly slow jogging around a gym
yeah.
listening to Pearl Jam
yeah.
in 2003. And
he's
like, just
that's
like,
Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
Yes, she can.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure watch superfans will do an edit where she's running and listening to like fight song or something. And we're like, that's the future leader of the free world. Again, though, with this show, I got to say that the thing that I keep coming back to, even when I start to go down the track of being a little pissy or nitpicky or whatever, is there is just a spine of quality. And you think about the pressure on an episode like this. We don't use the phrase bottle episode. This is not a bottle episode. But the way people have been using that phrase incorrectly has come to mean an episode that is in some ways bottled off, whether in continuity or in setting, from the rest of the season. And what that means on a practical level is you have to scout and shoot all new locations that you may not revisit and often bring in different cast that you might not see again. And that is incredibly taxing, both for a production staff, but also it's just hard to find good people.
I was going to say, what happens when every episode is a very special episode?
Oh, well, I mean, that's when HBO's budget comes into play.
But no, I just mean actually as a viewer. Mm. So it's like Sunday and you have pancakes and syrup and you're just like, this is delicious. But
this is what you eat when you watch The Last of Us?
No.
No wonder you're living in a hotel in Burbank.
I just mean like if you treat yourself.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'll treat myself tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. It like takes away the specialness. You just eat pancakes every day. With The Last of Us, I really, really like this show quite a bit. It will probably be in my top five, I would imagine.
Wow.
Top six, you know? But
bold words for February.
But it's like pretty much every other episode would be the peak of another season of television in terms of what the dramatic stakes are or their creative kind of what?
No, no, I see what you're saying. I also think that you say it'll be top five now and then December 12th when The English 2, The New English drops and you're like, forget this.
But that's just about Wes Welker.
It's God, okay, so it just fell off my list.
Yeah.
This is why the show is successful. Your point, I think it's not a bug, it's a feature, because this is what HBO knows its businesses, that it's special, that it's not binge, that it's worth waiting the week for. So they pour their resources and make every episode feel special. And I just didn't want to leave the previous point without saying, and then you find Storm Reid, who is a great performer, who seems like she just stepped into this part and developed a chemistry with Bella Ramsey that suggests they had been friends for the years that they've
for
been
sure.
friends with. That is no small thing. And any cynicism that I had about, you know, the accuracy of the contents of the video game arcade in 2003 were swept away by the last 3 minutes when the show treats the zombie thing not just as an opportunity for a jump scare, right, but as two 14-year-olds were
She's 17.
Two teenagers.
Yeah.
Were forced to go from feeling like their life is just beginning to the knowledge that their life is over in a matter of seconds due to forces not only outside of their control, but outside of their generation's
That's
control.
How I felt when Joe Carter hit the home run against the Phillies in 1993.
I did too. Look, that was a beautiful and touching
moment.
It was
all out in front of me, and then Mitch Williams just let one hang.
I said things about Canada at the age of 16 that I regret.
Yeah.
That still causes issues for me at the border today.
When you were a teenager.
Yeah.
Do you think you would be Fedra or a Firefly?
Wow. I sit here with you as my good friend telling you I would be volunteering for Fedra leadership posts. I would be so proud.
You would be like running for Fedra student council.
I would be so proud of my badges. I would be polishing them.
Yeah.
I would be the dude from Andor, but for Fedra. You know what I mean? What was his name? God, I'm blanking, but you know, the
Karen or something like that?
Cyril Karn. Yeah. I would be Cyril Karn, but for Fedra. Like, I would not have Mortal Kombat posters. I would have like previous heads of FEMA.
Fedra.
No.
Oh,
before
FEMA.
Fedra.
Brownie?
I would be.
You would get Brownie in there?
Like a heck of a. That never happened.
Yeah. That's true. That's right.
He was just still raising Arabian show ponies. He never got called into government. Things that's an example of this going better for
when
him.
When did FEMA get invented?
I mean, before 2004.
Are we sure?
Well, okay. All right. Conspiracy Chris. My point being, we wouldn't have gotten along because you would have been Firefly. You would have been going around being like, so what, apparently?
No, I don't know. I mean, like, Fireflies, I think I was probably more pampered than that. And I think that like the promise of like warm in the winter, cold in the summer, that kind of stuff, I probably would have been attracted to it.
Yeah.
But then again, the Fireflies have like that a pretty rad aesthetic.
You know? I think you would have been drawn by the logo. I think you would have been into it. Sounds like a band. And I also think that you, just the way you broke down that question speaks to your character, where you're like, I'm a practical guy. Like, how's this going to work out for me, my family, my stomach, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I'm a narrative guy. You know what I mean? Like, I can't just root for the 2022 Philadelphia Eagles. I have to be like, these young men are exemplars of their society.
You can't just be like, I'm from Philly, so I'm cheering for the Eagles. You have to be like, James Bradbury will be living with me for the time being.
Like, I wish Jalen Hurts was in some way related to me, just so I could talk about him and, like, send him emails.
Yeah.
So I would need to believe that the mission of Fedra was pure. They're keeping us safe.
I'm sure there's, like, a chat GPT where you can just be like, text me in the voice of Jalen Hurts.
Wow, I just got chills.
What mall
mm-hmm.
would you like to
I thought about this.
Be stationed at? Would you like to spend the apocalypse in?
Well, you know, current events, I mean, the Glendale Galleria is underrated. But I'm saying, like, as a child, at that era...
I don't know about that.
Yeah? It's indoors, which I think is better. Because if you're in LA, you can't be, like, the Americana.
No, you can't do Westfield.
No.
Yeah.
You get over... There's no sight lines.
No, Westfield's very confusing.
Westfield's very confusing and wide open.
You gotta cut across the Tesla, you know?
Come on.
Display and...
Now, also, think how much grain is stored in Italy.
That's right.
Like, that
that's
is right. ground zero.
These guys that's, are fucking exploding out of risotto.
That's
right.
Oh, yeah, all the dried... all the porcini? Plus the Durum wheat?
Yeah.
My God, it's a crime scene.
They don't have that problem at the Glendale Galleria.
That's exactly right. But as a child, I think this is an interesting question because from Philadelphia, you have some options.
Mm-hmm.
You were downtown, so your choices may have been different. I think we both would have immediately thought of King of Prussia, which, by the way, as an adult, the fact that there's a town called King of Prussia
in Pennsylvania,
that we just took as normal.
Yeah.
And King of Prussia had two malls, the fancier mall and the not as fancy mall. And going there was like a twice annual event. It was a huge deal. But because of its exoticism, I wouldn't have chosen that. So I would be more of maybe a Springfield Mall guy.
Okay.
Maybe Granite Run, but probably Springfield.
I feel like I knew Cherry Hill the best.
I knew you were going to go to Jersey.
So I'd probably do Cherry Hill Mall. The Gallery.
Oh, the Gallery.
Is probably the closest thing that Philadelphia has to Copley. So it would be like, that would be the most like that. A lot of moving stairs in the Gallery. I feel like there was a lot of escalator
which
action.
Which would have confused you, do you think, or you would have been
prepared
for it?
I also feel like there were like 750 entrances to the Gallery, so it'd be hard to kind of be like, great, we're all set. Like,
I never found the same
one. A lot
twice.
Of malls are like, you're in and then you're stuck until you get to the other side of the mall. The Gallery, I feel like there's always like a side exit.
That feeling when you park by the Macy's and you're like, I'm just going to the Foot Locker and I'm just going to bet it's here by the Macy's, and you go in and you're like, it's by Bloomingdale's.
it's like 900 yards away.
And you gotta walk.
Yeah.
And you gotta walk. And when you have kids, the walk involves like a kiosk that just sells Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
You're just doomed.
Do your kids like malls?
Yes.
Do they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially the little one.
Okay.
She likes a little retail therapy.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. It's fine. It's fine. Did you, before we move on from this episode, which again, look, big picture.
Are we being dicks about it?
No,
I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was less compelling because by nature, you introduce a character and a relationship and end it
like,
in an episode.
I
want to
know who those guys
do.
At Eastern Colorado were. You know what I mean? Like, what's their deal?
And they put it in the season in a way to kind of, you know, to bone us.
And so we got two more now.
Fine. Yeah.
Eight and nine.
It was good. It was good. But I thought it was more aesthetically good and I appreciated it more than I was riveted and entertained the way that I have been over the past few weeks. What... Last mall question.
Mm-hmm.
You go into an arcade at 14 and there's been some sort of apocalypse. What game do you devote your bucket of quarters to? Because I don't know if we've ever mentioned this in this podcast, but I don't know if it was my 12th birthday, the greatest birthday party of my life. There was a mall, I think it was at the Granite Run Mall, where you could rent the arcade out for the night.
Yeah.
And all the machines were free for you and your friends for that night. And
I wonder what that cost.
I still think about that night.
Do you think it was like $75?
Magical. Yes, I do. And you bring your own pizza. It cannot have been that much money. But, I mean, the Double Dragon, man. So much Double
so
Dragon.
So, if I had nothing but time,
mm-hmm.
and if money was no object,
mm-hmm.
I would like to find out what happens 5 seconds into Dragon's Lair.
Yes!
So, Dragon's Lair was a game that cost a dollar. and it was a full-on animated movie.
It's like a laser disc directed by animation legend Don Bluth.
Yeah, and all it did was like it would flash, and when it flashed, you had to hit a button in a certain amount of time.
Turn left or
which I could never figure out, and I always died, and it was always like, well, that was just four games that I just lost, you know?
Yes.
But if I could just practice and just kind of feel it out, I would just love to know what happens later in Dragon's Lair. I have no idea.
This is the greatest answer, and I agree with you. Do you think...
But honestly, like my other like therapeutic games would be the Daytona game that she sat at. Yeah. I love that. And also the Star Wars game where you sat down and you had the kind of... it was more like a TIE Fighter.
It was a TIE Fighter controller,
thing, but you were flying... Were you a TIE Fighter or were you...
No, but it felt like it was... There were a lot of TIE Fighters on the outside of the box.
And you do the sort of trench run.
Do you think, anecdotally, and you know... considering inflation, which I know you always do, do you think you spent more money on Dragon's Lair or import CDs that were recommended by the enemy or Melody Maker?
I had good discipline. So basically what happened is every time I would go into a new arcade and Dragon's Lair was there, I would always just get seduced and then lose and then be like disappointed because I'd have like $5 and I had four. And then I would play NBA Jam for a while.
Yeah.
Because you can actually like... you could play NBA Jam for like 10 minutes or
Scott
whatever.
Scott Skiles and Shaq.
Yeah, you could just be...
remember that?
Yeah.
What a legendary combo.
Do you think Shaq tearfully thanked Scott Skiles?
Sir. No one dished it to me in the paint.
And then, yeah. I mean, this is sort of boring. I feel like I sound down on Last of Us, but I definitely like really love the show.
Yeah, I don't think you sent down. The last point I would say is we've referenced this recently. There are, as I'm sure there are in many cities, like retro arcades now or like barcades.
Yes.
Like, and so I've taken my children to an arcade here where they have these games, including Dragon's Lair. And nothing kills your childhood dreams more than taking your children to see what you thought was fun.
And they're just like, what is going on here?
This is dumb. And they play air hockey for an hour.
Let's talk about Party Down.
Yeah.
This is bad podcasting. This was just good.
The rest of the podcast is going to be... I mean, I know we've set a bar high today.
Well, okay, so you and I always give each other an out with comedies where you're like, I don't know what you want me to say. It was funny, you know?
Yeah.
Leading up to the moment where I hit play on the Stars app to watch this, I was like, did they need to do this? Are we sure this was a good idea? Are we sure this wasn't like... hashtag bring Party Down back, and like then it was like, oh, you guys are going to actually do it, and dare they make it without Lizzie Kaplan?
Did the app say, Chris, would you like to resume Power Book 2, Episode 8? And you were like, not today, Stars.
And then this starts, and the Party Down crew is reunited, although they are all in different places in their life.
Yep.
And Ron is still running Party Down and is hoping to make a purchase of the entire company. Mm-hmm. But Henry is a high school teacher. The Jane Lynch character is now an heiress. Megan Mullally's character is a talent manager.
Of her daughter.
And Ryan Hansen is now on the cusp.
He's
Nitromancer of superhero superstardom. And over the course of the evening, a lot of hijinks take place. Jennifer Garner shows up as the wife of a huge actor, of James Marsden.
A
right?
girlfriend.
And she's a producer.
She's a producer.
Quinta Brunson comes in. As
showing up,
Ryan Hansen's agent, and is fucking hilarious. Where she was like, when she's like, "I meant we in aggregate."
she also says Nazis, yay or nay.
Yeah, she's great. It's just really good, and this is the kind of thing where I guess like you almost feel the pressure of a reunion or the pressure of like I remember when Veronica Mars the movie came out that was crowdsourced, and it was like every scene was like a nod to a previous character or a nod to a sort of callback moment. And I actually think probably not having somehow Lizzie Kaplan's character is still working in and around Party Down 2 is probably the best thing for it. And I don't know. I just like the whole idea that Henry is at this during this episode is supposed to go out, have dinner with his wife.
Yeah.
But continues to hang out with these like weirdos because like it's just more interesting.
Yeah.
I just thought it was like so funny, and all the little like, was that Franz Kahn's like who was the Miles, the guy?
I gotta look at the cast. I don't know.
Anyway, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was funny. No, I have more to say than that. It's kind of best case scenario, I think, because I love Party Down. I think I recapped Party Down for Vulture. It's one of the first TV things that I wrote years ago. Yeah. And the thing about Party Down is that it was always kind of ramshackle.
Mm-hmm.
It never took itself particularly seriously. it always was more of a good hang than it was like a significant achievement. And the smartest thing that they did with this revival, and I think a lot of credit goes to John Enbaum, who's the writer and showrunner and was in the same role in the previous iteration of the show, just didn't sweat it. There was no mandate to answer questions necessarily or resolve things or land the plane. It was just like, oh, let's just make more Party Down. And I kind of sneaky respect the hell out of this premiere because, full disclosure, I started watching it and I was like, I can't believe this show is also in color. And the motion is so smooth. It's beautiful. And I was watching it. It was like 10 minutes in. I was enjoying it. And I was falling asleep. And I was like, this isn't right. I'm too tired to be watching the show. I stopped. And then
Were you falling asleep like on your couch looking at a giant television?
Yes.
Okay.
At 7 p.m.
Okay.
No. But I was like, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to give this another night because I have waited 13 years for the show. I love it. I'm not in the right headspace for it. I'm glad I restarted.
Has it been 13 years?
Yeah. I'm glad I'm in the right headspace for it because it was just really enjoyable and good. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether when I turned it on, whether I was tired or like, I can't wait for this to rock my world. It's not that. It's just Party Down again.
Yeah,
and
anything, I wish there had been another episode because like once it had kind of like welcomed me in, I was like, I would go two more right now.
I am still curious. I mean, they must have numbers. Like as every piece, including The Ringer, had a really good oral history of the show up last week.
Alan Siegel, right?
Everyone has noted that no one watched the show. I mean, the finale got 70,000 viewers. There must be some data that people have discovered it, caught up to it on Hulu, et cetera. The amount of attention this revival has gotten, I'm really curious what Starz is expecting. Like, if they're like, oh, we have a comedy franchise.
But don't you think also, one of the things I thought really worked was that Adam Scott has obviously since gone on to have this incredibly successful career and is now top-lining Severance. And, you know, it's like, it's Adam Scott.
Yeah.
And he easily slips into being Henry the loser. Or not the loser, but Henry the guy whose life just didn't break the right way.
Yep.
You know? And so there's no pantomime of, oh, like this guy who's become way too big.
Yeah.
You know, like if they did a Parks and Rec reunion or if they did like a Friday Night Lights reunion and like Michael B. Jordan was playing Vince.
I thought you were going to say a Big Little Lies season one reunion for Adam Scott. I hope Adam's listening. Just bring the beard
but
back.
But like he's a really good actor.
Yeah, he's
and he
actor.
Like just fits back into playing Henry rather than being like, I'm Adam Scott. Like I'll pretend like my life didn't
work okay. out. It's okay. The thing that we talk about when they're like, you know, like the kiss of death for some movies where you're like, well, it sure looks like they had a good time making it, but they left us out.
Yeah.
That's not the case here.
Yeah.
These people are happy to be here.
That's like all George Clooney movies.
Do you think that affects the quality? Oh, the ones he directs.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, you guys were just pranking and playing hoops.
Leatherheads.
Yeah.
The blooper reel is killer. So all the pieces are here. Like, it was smart to give Martin Starr's character, Roman, like a lot of the meta, nobody wants to be back here. Why would you possibly be rooting for people who just had sex a couple times while working together a decade ago? You know, it's having its cake and eating it too in a way that is pleasing. And also, you know, they do remember, John Enbaum certainly remembers, like, what fuels this particular engine? And it's things like Ken Marino just being abject.
Yeah, Ken Marino's hand injury in this episode was really good. And then he fucking collapses.
I was watching the scene when he just bangs his head repeatedly on the metal table in the kitchen. And I'm like, how many takes? And I bet he gave them every time, you know? I think is just also sneaky, amazing on the show and always has been is Jane Lynch.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting to read in that Alan Siegel piece that when she first showed up to do the show, she was doing kind of the character that she did. Like she was doing kind of her character on Glee before Glee, just kind of being mean Jane.
Yeah.
And they wrote towards her being kind of kind and spacey and hippie, kind of person who doesn't know that a grand is a thousand, not a million.
Yeah, that explains a lot.
It's good. It's nice to have it back.
Yeah.
And I do think it's because of the lack of stakes. Like you can just run some comedies back if you're aware of what you have and what you're working with. I'm happy that it's back. I can't wait to watch more. We're going to do the thing now where we say something's funny about a different show.
Yeah, but in a different way.
Okay. Oh, like in an English accent? How are you going to say?
I can't do Diane Morgan's accent. It's too northern.
Explain this.
So, Kunk on Earth is...
What a title.
a mockumentary, I guess, is or a parody of BBC style historical docuseries. So it's essentially Philomena Kunk is the title character.
It just makes you laugh.
Who is a What are her credentials?
She seems to be
inquisitive.
A journalist?
Yeah.
A documentary filmmaker?
She's hosting this show called Kunk on Earth, which is also the Netflix show that you were watching.
Mm. It's literally the planet she's on right now.
And is essentially a history of the world with this northern British woman making these asides and kind of making these observations and comparing major historical figures to her mate Paul, who gets thrown out of a TGI Fridays and stuff like that.
Talking about the birthplace of culture, Greece, the country, not the musical.
You might remember Diane Morgan was on, gosh, what was the Ricky Gervais movie where he's working in a newspaper?
I feel like this is like a crossword puzzle.
Well, she's also on Motherland, the Sharon Horgan written show that I loved so much.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, she's great. She is a force of nature in this show.
She was on Afterlife. She was on the other Ricky Gervais show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he plays a journalist in that.
Does he?
Yeah.
Like Mark Ruffalo plays a journalist in Spotlight?
I wanted to say this about Kunk on Earth.
Yeah.
This is a TV version of the Will Ferrell joke in Austin Powers where it's like he gets like dropped into the basement and he's lit on fire and he's like, oh, won't anybody help me? And it's like funny. And then it's not as funny, and then it's hilarious, and then it's really not that funny, but then it's the funniest thing you've ever seen.
It goes on.
That's this show, where it's like, it is just really one joke, right? Mm-hmm. But that joke, around minute 16 of each half hour episode, becomes the funniest joke of all time.
So we should also say that we have the show because of Charlie Brooker from Black Mirror.
He produced it.
And wrote on it as well, I think. And his deal with Netflix brought us the show. And so it's not just that she's explaining history of Earth and life on Earth in a very particular way. She's talking to experts who have been very kindly.
Old school Daily Show style.
Yeah, she's talking to real British academics and asking them if prehistoric man had the same number of holes as we do now. Or if early man had a brand name for the meat that they were. And I think the only note given to the experts is like, don't break.
Yeah.
Like, just got to roll with it. Even when she asked the expert on Roman history about the Romans inventing anal bleaching. This show made me so happy. It's so funny. And the jokes are it is very old school. And it's just like, very, very, very silly, clever British things. Clever, silly. Silly, clever.
Uh-huh.
Is that contradictory?
No.
Just tossed off in absolute deadpan. And I attempted to show this to my children, actually.
You tried to show your children Kunk on Earth.
Yeah, because I don't think they have enough British comedy in their lives yet.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried to, and this is a running theme with all culture that I tried to show them. Like, I want them to see Monty Python. I want them to see, like, things that I thought of as very funny
when you were a kid
as a Fedra obsessed student council member, because I want them to
fascistic.
I want them to be cops too. So I did, but they, to all of that, they say like, why do I want to watch Boys? Which I'm like, fair point.
Okay.
So I was like, Philomena Kunk is the hero that we were promised, and they did really like it. And then at the 10-minute mark of the first episode, she curses for the first time, and my older daughter, who might be Fedra, was like, turn it off.
Because of the swearing.
She doesn't like swears.
Is there a lot of swearing going on at her school, you think?
No, I just think she disapproves of it. Like, I played her
I don't hear a lot of kids swearing now that I think about it.
You hanging out on playgrounds a lot, Chief? You're like, so what?
I guess all the kids I know also, for the most part, are relatively pre-verbal. So.
Right, or adults now. Like, you used to know them as kids. Yeah, there's the line where she says, like, this is the first city in the world. She's walking through ruins and she says, this isn't the first city. The first city ever built is in Iraq, which is miles from here and fucking dangerous. And that was where we turned it off. But otherwise, good for all ages. I love the show. It's funny. What else is there to
say? Look, we're here. We're a recommendation engine.
Well, the thing is about us, between this and my glowing review of Star Trek Picard season 3, we just watch a lot of TV for you guys. So all we can say at the end of this podcast is you're welcome.
Right. Kaya, how are you? What shows do you think that most jumped out?
Yeah, what's your power ranking of things we talked about today?
Last of Us, Kunk on Earth, or Party Down?
Well, I'm already watching Last of Us.
Picard, okay.
Picard season three.
Picard's probably at the bottom, gotta say.
So yeah. I didn't do a good enough job?
No.
Okay, that's on me.
I don't have access to the Stars app.
Okay.
So I might skip the Party Down revival, but I might revisit the Party Down original, which I think is still on Hulu.
I think so.
So I guess I gotta go Kunk on Earth.
I would love to see your face as you watch Kunk on Earth.
Okay.
That should be like a be real.
I'll like live stream it or something.
Okay.
Do you think her face will be like enjoying it or she'll be mad at
us? I think she'll be like, huh, that was pretty funny. She's not like I don't really think of Kaya as like an LOL.
Oh.
Like doubled over crying laughing person.
That's because she keeps it 100 for us in this professional
setting.
Or maybe
she just doesn't find us that funny.
Wait, that is...
But if she doesn't mean like she has plenty of opportunities at the Ringer, she doesn't have to be at this at the watch. I think she's here because she loves what she does.
I find you guys delightful.
Yeah. See,
first of all, if you said that under duress, blink twice. That was an incredible cell phone. You're like, Kaya doesn't. She's not really a laugh out loud person. We've been incredible talking about.
I think of myself as a very boisterous laugher.
Yeah, you bring energy. You bring good laugh energy. You're
Kaya
a good laugher.
We'll have a subdued giggle into a laugh,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of immediately goes back to Kaya. You know,
I think Kaya's thing is that because she's muted often, she's just.
Oh, you think so? There's like a mute button on herself.
Yes, and that's why. Yes, because she's such a professional. And then after we're done recording, she comes up with tears in her eyes, saying, "Sirs, sirs, that was the hardest I've ever laughed." Please tell us more about arcades in 1991.
Yeah.
And whether you were a cop in middle school. This is the episode where we left the studio.
Like, I'm laughing. You know what I mean?
See, you're a good time, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not me.
Great seeing you.
I'm just doing the sheet folding thing, you know, where you can, like, bounce a quarter off it.
You're like, sir, do I get my Fedra Blue Star?
I will treasure
another
this.
Pile of gruel. See, I'm Kansas City bound.
You're gone.
I'm free. I'm going to work for Kathleen.
Did you hear that at the beginning? You vote with your stomach. You were just like, I want food in the winter.
No, that's what Fedra offers.
Right.
Right. I'm saying like I'll forego that for a life of democracy.
We'll leave this for next week, but I did see...
We're doing a podcast on Thursday, so you can just leave it for then.
Oh, no. I'm taking another wellness week after this. Where someone's like, these people in Last of Us should just maybe stop eating bread. Like, don't you think everyone would be gluten-free even 20 years on?
Yeah, but nobody... I think the grain supply has since been...
Purged?
Well, I bet that they've taken control of the means of production. And they're not like, let's just get the grain from over here in the mushroom field.
That was a little Marxy, what you just said. I'm going to keep my eye on you at Fedra HQ. That was a little suspect. Where was, in Last of Us, the guy that got them? Was he in Spencer Gifts? Where was he?
He was in I think he's in the arcade. Or he's down the hall from the arcade.
No, he was down the hall. We did the tracking shot. I think he was in Spencer Gifts.
So and Spencer Gifts is not always Halloween. It's a seasonal thing, right?
Well, Spencer Gifts just had like a lot of stuff.
But probably not Halloween. So that the outbreak happens in October of 2003.
Oh, well, also, I mean, you know, this is a sad state of affairs for my beloved Fedra. But, you know, we are in an era now when seasonal stores just seem to be year-round. Like, remember, they used to be like, because they can't fill the storefronts.
No. The Christmas stores turn into Halloween stores at a certain point, don't they?
They used to. But due to supply chain issues, I think some of them are just...
Okay.
Just Halloween year Halloween.
You're the one
year
who
around.
Works for big government. You should get...
I personally voted for President Jean-Luc Picard, and I will vote for him again. All right, we'll do some research on this. I just felt like the Fireflies didn't do a really good job sweeping the mall.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, literally, because it was filthy. I mean, like, there was just glass everywhere.
Wow. Which team are we? This is the people can't pin us down.
Yeah.
Politically, that's good for our
We're
podcast.
We're Mavericks.
Kaya, cut the last 19 minutes, please. And we'll be back Thursday.
Okay. Talk to you guys soon.
Great. Really one of our greatest jobs.